Press claims of upsurge in SNP support causes panic in London. Privilege widely discussed in Scottish comment news pages. And latest on Chile miners trapped rescue effort. This is a Scottish news bubble for the 24th of January 2021. First today, the Sunday Times Scotland, and indeed the English edition as well, is leading tonight on fresh claims that the union between Scotland and England and Northern Ireland is in crisis due to the prospect of an SNP landslide in the May holiday elections, and new polling they've commissioned showing a majority of people in Northern Ireland now support a border poll which could end in the north and south of Ireland becoming united so that Northern Ireland could rejoin the European Union. This is quite poor journalism, in my opinion, as these claims have been around for weeks, if not months, and it looks like a poorly managed attempt by Boris Johnson's press secretary to state that they are noticing what's going on in Scotland and they're going to come up with a plan to try and thwart this upsurge in support all of a sudden, when the facts are is this upsurge has been around for quite a few months, and any attempt to reverse it needs to come from Scotland itself and not be a hastily arranged stunt by Westminster politicians who, by doing this in such a panicked way, are showing how clearly out of touch they are with the Scottish political system. This story was also covered by the Sunday Times and the Daily Telegraph a few days ago, when their columnist, the political editor of The Spectator, suggested that Boris Johnson was about to commission a royal commission to look into what further powers could be devolved in an attempt to kick the issue into the long grass and defuse the constitutional question. This will clearly not work, as it's been the case for quite a while. This is the dominant issue in Scottish politics, and people in the electorate are only interested in accepting authentic Scottish responses, which could still come from the Conservative or Scottish Labour Party if they get their act together before the elections in May. We'll wait and see. The Scottish journalism comment pages this week have been dominated by claims of abused privilege and what this means. This was brought about by Celtic Football Club taking their players on a much criticised trip to Dubai for a winter training session, which has been widely criticised and well covered in other areas of news and other podcasts. However, the in-depth reaction to this has been more interesting from comment journalists. Katrina Stewart and Rosemary Goring in The Herald were the two best examples of this. Katrina Stewart had a good piece in which she questioned the nature of privilege and how it relates to people. She talked about how she once questioned a person interviewed in Glasgow on their background and couldn't resist asking if they'd gone to Scotland's most famous private school, Hutchie Grammar. In doing this, she also questioned herself as to why this was such an important issue for her and how she was questioned for being privileged within her own community as she was perceived as living in the posh part of Govan Hill in the south of Glasgow. This was an interesting piece and similar to one in the Herald a few days previous by Rosemary Goring, in which she questioned the right of football to play on in the current coronavirus situation and how this privilege was being abused by footballers and certain clubs by the perception that they were not taking the responsibility seriously by being seen in social situations, not social distancing. She compared this to the leisure pursuits that she likes, like theatre and concerts, not being able to go ahead in any form at all due to the lockdown, and how this privilege was one that many in the artistic sector could not understand and had little sympathy for. Interesting. These two articles move beyond the traditional way in which anything to do with football in Scotland is covered in a very tribal way, as pointed out by Stuart Cosgrove on the Talk Media podcast when they briefly discussed the subject on Wednesday. Also in the comment pieces this week, Tom Gordon, the political journalist at the Herald, had a good article also bringing up privilege, but relating to the Scottish Labour leader contest, which is ongoing. He brought up his contribution to the last Labour leadership challenge in Scotland, in which Anna Sarwar was defeated by the person who just resigned, Richard Leonard. He brought up all the privilege that Anna Sarwar has, in his opinion, due to his father being the previous MP of the seat which he took over from as a MP in 2000. He states that he became the MP really by hanging on the coat pegs of his father in a term, and also that he expected to become leader of Scottish Labour the last time he attempted to become this, rather than proving to have worked hard beyond having and being part of a political elite family. He also talked a lot about the financial contributions of wealthy members of his family to his campaign, and how Anna Sarwar himself has put some of his wealth from his family, cash and carry firm based in Glasgow, into a trust fund for his children, so as he appears not to be as wealthy as he probably was asset wise. This is interesting up to a point, but it's really more interesting the substance of the man himself rather than his bank balance. Although this is a perception that many in the Labour Party will not like, particularly the fact that his children have been sent to private school. But at this level of politics, there's much hypocrisy with people who are earning a higher income than most people, claiming to be down the people, but people with this level of income, it's very hard for them to genuinely really claim this. So the extent their income being above the average person's is really neither here nor there, in my opinion. The Scotsman continued to have quite unimaginative comment pieces this week, focusing once again on Nicola Sturgeon and Alex Salmond's prolonged feud and how their falling out has led to a government Holyrood inquiry into why there was such a botched investigation into his alleged crimes by the Procurator Fiscal Service in Scotland, which ended up with the Scottish Government having to pay quite hefty legal fees. This story is very technical and is quite boring to most people in Scotland at a time of a national health crisis. It's seen as very politically nerdy and is not something that people are interested in, even if Nicola Sturgeon did lie at various stages as to how much he knew about Alex Salmond's alleged offences. It's not going to make any difference, quite clearly, to the outcome of the elections in Scotland in May. And the only people who seem to be interested in pursuing this as a big political story are many enemies within the SNP who don't like the direction she's taken the party in, even though she's made it a lot more forward-looking and respecting equality and ultimately more electable across Scotland rather than just in their heartlands, which is what seemed to be happening towards the end of Alex Salmond's reign, when the growth of the party across Scotland had stalled. Also today, the miners in Chile are preparing for a long wait for the rescue effort after the mine they were in collapsed earlier in the week, you may recall. This is similar to the successful rescue of the miners in Chile, but this one in China is even more complicated due to the mine shafts collapsing completely and the fact that so much rubble has to be removed from the two mine shafts before any of the rescue attempts can begin. The authorities are saying it will take up to 19 days to remove all the rubble, which is quite remarkable. But luckily, there is narrow mine shafts still available, enabling air to get into the where the mines are trapped, and enabling the authorities to lower down fresh supplies and porridge, as I said earlier in the week. The miners are in good spirits, however, their health is deteriorating, although at a slow pace, hopefully. We wish them all the best. That's it for now. We'll speak again.